Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening here on the solstice, longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere anyway. And for all of our listeners in Tierra del Fuego and Antarctica, let our podcast get you through the winter. We'll deal with the summer up here. And what are we dealing with this hour? We're going to be talking about the Farm Bill. I knew you'd be excited about that, but actually that's the reaction to the Miami Heat beating the San Antonio Spurs in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, second championship for LeBron James. And speaking of Kings, later this hour we'll mark the 50-year anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, language he tried out first in a speech delivered in Detroit, which turned out to be a warm-up for the Washington, D.C. dream speech we know today. Plus, the dreams of undocumented immigrants recounted in a new film.
There's thousands of other stories like mine. And again, we're here. We want to be taxpaying citizens. We are taxpaying people.
That's Jose Antonio Vargas in the film Documented, which opens today. But we begin this hour noting that yesterday was the official United Nations Day of Refugees, which the UN noted with numbers reported to be the highest in 20 years. 45 million displaced people in 2012, an estimated 7.6 million people newly displaced last year, including more than a quarter of the population of Syria.
10 million people will be in desperate need of food, shelter, and assistance. So the lives of millions of people are in your hands, and you must find common ground.
That's actress Angelina Jolie speaking there as a representative for the United Nations at a refugee camp in Jordan. Joining us now is Megan Bradley, a fellow at the Joint Brookings London School of Economics Project on Internal Displacement. Megan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So give us a sense of the scale. I said at the top of the hour that the biggest city in the world is a tent city of 45 million, if you count all of the displaced people. Of course, they're dispersed around the world. Give me a bit of a breakdown of that 45 million, if you could.
Sure. Well, the past year has been a really horrible one for the displacement of human beings due to conflict and persecution. We've seen in the past year an increase of almost 3 million in the number of people who are displaced around the world, so that now we have a total of 15.4 million people who are registered as refugees by the United Nations, and a total of 28.8 million people who are on the record as having been displaced within their own countries as a result of conflict and human rights violations.
The internal displacement seems to be a bigger story almost, and that comes from various kinds of reasons, everything from war to climate change.
That's true. So these are individuals who are often in a situation that's very much like refugees, but because they haven't crossed an international border, oftentimes we don't hear much about them in the media. It can be very difficult for humanitarian agencies and UN organizations to reach them with assistance. So ultimately, their governments are responsible for providing them with human rights protection and with the assistance that they often need to save their lives, in fact, but it's often the governments who are really responsible for their displacement in the first place. So it can be quite a paradoxical situation.
Well, it's a horror show. I mean, is it the case that the people in Congo, for instance, one of the largest populations of internally displaced, are out of the reach of the United Nations or the international community at large?
Well, some of them are being reached by NGOs and UN agencies, but many are out of reach. This is also a massive problem in Syria at the moment. So we hear quite a bit about the 1.6 million Syrian refugees who are in neighboring countries like Jordan and Lebanon, but we hear much less, really, about the 4.25 million who are displaced within their own country. And many of these individuals are out of the reach of humanitarian organizations, and their government is certainly not coming through on its responsibility towards them. In many cases, obviously, the government is actively persecuting its own citizens.
The situation in Mali is a pretty horrible combination of religious sectarian violence and a massive drought, I mean, climate issues.
Mm-hmm. The situation in Mali, I think, is indicative of what we can expect to see more of in future years. This really complex intersection of individuals who are on the move because of conflict that's linked to the effects of climate change, natural disasters like drought.
Has technology helped in this situation, maintaining communication? You know, people bring cell phones with them. I mean, it used to be the case that, you know, people would leave their homes with their pictures. And that would be about it, and anything else that they could carry. But now you've got people coming into refugee camps, you know, able to communicate if you could just get a wireless network up.
In some cases, that is true, but we often also see that people are fleeing with nothing more than the clothes that they have on their back. So it's a possibility for some who have the benefit of that access to technology, but there are still so many who, you know, are really not in that situation yet.
Do we design well for refugee settlements? And do we understand that sometimes these places will have to be a home for people for a matter of years?
I would say that we are coming to understand better and better what the principles might be for designing settlements for refugees and IDPs, but often they're not applied in practice. I'd also stress that the vast majority of people who are displaced around the world today are actually not living in camps. They're not living in settlements that have been specifically designed for them. They're living in cities intermixed with the local population. This is the case, for example, with both IDPs, internally displaced persons, and refugees from Syria. The vast majority are living in apartments that they've rented, or they're living in shacks that they've built. They're staying with host families. It's only a minority who are actually living in formal camps. Those who are living in formal camps are often the poorest of the poor. And because these camps are constructed rapidly and with the idea that a clear signal needs to be sent that these are not permanent settlements, the infrastructure that's available is often really inadequate.
Megan Bradley is a fellow at the Joint Brookings London School of Economics Project on Internal Displacement. Thanks so much.
Thank you.